I'm an addict. My name is Bud. Before I start, I'd like for us to all take a moment of silence for all our dear friends we lost to the disease of addiction. Thank you. Like I said, I am an addict. My name's Bud. I got an NA home group. It's against all odds, Elkton, Maryland, Sunday nights. I probably hit it on the way home. I got an NA sponsor, his name's Norm S. And I got a clean date, May 15th, 1984. So I've been around, I've had a few cups of coffee with you guys. I like to share kind of more of the traditional, the way I was taught. I talk about what happened, what it was like, and what got me to Narcotics Anonymous, and I try to talk about what Narcotics Anonymous taught me, and then I try to talk about what my life is like today, because it's really about today. So I grew up in a house where there really wasn't a lot of love in the house. My mom had untreated mental illness, and my dad traveled a lot for his job, and he was a war veteran from the Korean War, and he was a very angry guy. He had a lot of issues himself, and it's like a lot of that anger was taken out on me. I was the oldest, and so home wasn't a place that I really wanted to be. So anytime I found a way to go somewhere else or be somewhere else, I was somewhere else. And the first time I remember using on purpose, other than getting little sips of beer at a backyard party or something, was I was 9 years old, and me and a kid down the street stole a six pack of beer out of his father. His dad was a drinker and had a refrigerator just for his beer in the basement. So we stole a six pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon out of that refrigerator. And we went out into this gravel pit where we, where we played and had our little forts and stuff. And we each chug-lugged three now piss-warm Pabst Blue Ribbons. And I'm here to tell you, if you're 9 years old and you chug-lug three beers, you'll get fucked up. So my social drinking lasted all of about 30 seconds. But something miraculous happened to me that day. I'm probably dating myself, but I don't know if everybody in this gathering has seen the movie The Wizard of Oz. So when they're still in Kansas, everything's in black and white, and it's real drab and dreary, and everything's kind of sad and miserable. But as soon as she hits Oz, everything's in bright technicolor, and there's midgets dancing and everything's bright, and the streets are made of gold and all that stuff. Well, when I drank those beers, that's how I felt. Everything just opened up, and it was like, wow, this is how I want to feel all the time. I mean, I made that decision right there. Of course, there were some consequences because, me and my friend both, we wrestled around, we laughed, we giggled, we were throwing dirt clods at each other and stuff. But, if you're nine, you're really not built for even three beers. And after about an hour and a half, I started getting sick to my stomach. You kind of do all that. So I ran home, threw up for a while, went in my room, felt the rotation of the earth, all of that stuff. But And my friend, he said, man, I'm never doing that again. And as far as I know, he didn't drink again until probably he was an adult, because in all the consecutive partying and drinking and all the stuff that I got into later, I didn't see him. But my response was, I'm going to learn how to do this without feeling the consequences. And that was an idea that I pursued nearly till my own death. That never changed. And there was consequences all along the way. I didn't recognize them right away. Not being real stupid, I can't say I started using every day at age nine. But I found a way to make those chances. Every time I got a chance, I did. And I, not being real stupid, I found ways to get, make those chances get closer and closer and closer together until by the time I was 12 years old, I was using something every day. You know, I was smoking weed or taking pills or, you know, hallucinogens. You know, it was the 60s and 70s when I grew up. It was, you know, there's lots of stuff around. And, you know, there's lots of hippies around. And they were, you know, like, kids are beautiful people, dude. You know, here, try this, you know. And, yeah, I was on it. I was in on it. So, you know, by the time I was 12, I was using all the time. And I was like, you know, I just remember looking at my son, who's now 20, but looking at him when he was 12 years old and thinking to myself, what a fucking disaster it would be if he was doing the things that I did when I was that age. But, you know, from my perspective at that age, everything was great. You know, now, obviously, my grades took a hit. My grades had been pretty good, you know, until about 10, 12, 13. You know, my family relationships that were already bad got worse. You know, my battles with my father got more and more epic. I started running away. By the time I was 15, they stopped making me come back. So I was on my own. And I thought, you know, this is it. This is the life. You know, I was big for my age. I could lie about my age and get a job. People weren't really, you know, they weren't checking IDs when you went to the liquor store or any of that stuff. As far as, in my mind, as far as I was concerned, I was an adult and I was partying like an adult and I thought I was having a great time, consequence free. And then, I found out some things about myself. It was really getting difficult for me to work enough hours at a job to make enough money to do drugs the way that I liked. And I know nobody else in this gathering has ever had this idea, but I thought maybe, just maybe, if I get involved in drug sales, that I could get my drugs for free, you know? So that idea worked out real good for about 3 weeks. And then the people that were giving me the drugs wanted their money back, and I really didn't have it. And they were not overly friendly people, let me tell you. And I didn't think they were going to kill me, but they had shot one boy in the kneecaps. And I was a little concerned about that. And that was like the first time I really ever thought to myself, man, there's something wrong with the way I'm living. You know, it's a little excessive. Something's going on. I need to make a change. And you know, I need to get out of this situation. And I was watching TV, and it was just about the time that the Ayatollah took the hostages in Iran and all that stuff. And I was watching TV, and there was this commercial came on that said, be all you can be. We get more done by 5 a.m. than everybody else gets done all day. You know, discipline and all of that stuff. And I'm thinking, that's what I need, some discipline. So I joined the U.S. Army, lied about my age again, forged my dad's signature, and now I'm in the Army. And you know, that plan worked for a short period of time, just like a whole lot of my other plans. So it wasn't long before, you know, addicts, we could find each other. So I found other addicts in the Army. And we found ways to use in the Army without getting caught. You know, there's a million ways to cheat a piss test. I'm not going to tell you what they are. If you have to take a piss test and you want to cheat it, you're going to have to figure it out for yourself. But we did all those things. And consequences started again. You know, I really liked the Army, and I did really well in the Army. In the beginning, I was like, so they sent me to my my permanent duty station in Germany, and I was like the third month in, I was soldier of the post. 3 months after that, I was in the stockade, you know? So it didn't take long. You know, in Germany, they had some drugs I'd never heard of. They had some stuff you could buy over the counter that you had to have a prescription to get here. And I was like, I love this place. So my party would be you know, because I had to change drugs up, but I found ones that I liked. So I'd take a handful of pills and I'd chase it with some liquor and I'd go out to the club on Friday night. And that's when I discovered time travel. Always went forward, never went backward. But it's like, you know, things might be all right. You know, I might go and just have a normal weekend, what I considered a normal weekend. But then other times I go out Friday night, and the next thing I know, it's Sunday morning and I'm in jail. And I didn't know how I got there or why I was there. Usually there were some people there to explain it to me. But it was usually minor stuff. And in the Army, they didn't really get too excited about it up until, you know, this happened a few times. And the last time it happened, they told me that I was in jail for 2 counts of assault with intent to commit murder. And nobody was laughing anymore, especially me. I was not laughing. And I was like, man, you know, they're talking about like 60 years in prison. And yeah, I was not excited about 60 years. And Army's got their own kind of version of prison. And they don't believe in like parole and all that stuff either. So I was really, you know, this was like another big red flag, like, man, there's something going on. And again, I was like, you know, I know nobody else here has ever done this, but you know, I wasn't really a praying person, but I became one. And I was like, God, if you just get me out of this one, I'll never do it again. Well, God stepped in and did his part of that bargain, but I really didn't. You know, once I got out of the farther along in this legal process I went, it became pretty obvious that there was just too much craziness. You know, the fight brawl that I'd been involved in involved too many people and nobody's story matched up. So the Army just decided to put everybody who was involved out of the Army. So I was off the hook again. One thing that I did before I left to go home, so I'd been in, they'd had me in a, they got a prison. I don't know if it's still there, but back then they had a prison in Mannheim, Germany, just for U.S. soldiers. So I got to take a brief vacation in there. And I detoxed off all of my goodies. And that was interesting. That was a tough detox. So when they released me back to my unit to wait for my orders to go home, which takes, you know, it always takes them a long time to do stuff. You know, I'd lost my clearance, so I couldn't do my job anymore. But it was like I was allowed to go to AA meetings because they thought I was a drunk. So they said, you can go to AA, but you fuck up anything else, you're going to jail and you're going to stay in jail. They made that clear. I was like, okay. So I was going to these AA meetings, and I liked them. They were my kind of people. There were a lot of brawlers and fighters and, you know, wild characters. Sit around and tell war stories, drink coffee. You could smoke in the meetings then. I was smoked. I'd come in there. The first time I went in there, I was still all beat up from my most recent capture, because I didn't get arrested. I always got captured. I had like a cast on one wrist, and my face was all blowed up like Elvis on pills because they beat me in the face with a stick. So it was a mess. And this lady like busted out crying. She's like, I think you belong here with us, you know. She's like, you know, mothering on me and stuff. I was like, man, you know, these people are all right. But they wanted me to do some things, a lot like the stuff we talk about here. They wanted me to get a sponsor and go to lots of meetings and read this book and do these steps and do all this stuff. And I could read. I read the steps, and I was like, I don't think so. I think I'm doing all right just coming here. And I thought I could just use it as a social club. And that worked, just like a lot of my other solutions, for a short period of time. And then I went home. And they made sure that there were some people that I could talk to at home who were doing the same thing. And I went and met those people. And I was, you know, I was clean. I'd been clean for a while, and I was excited to be clean. I liked it, but I just didn't feel like I felt like if I did all the stuff in those steps, that I would be weak, that I would be a punk, that somehow I'd be a doormat for everybody else. And I just didn't feature myself as some kind of, you know, turn the other cheek kind of guy. And, you know, the way I'd been raised, you know, you were a mark. People would fuck with you. And I'd been fucked with. And I'd, you know, it's like when I was a kid in school, you know, my dad was beating my ass on a regular for whatever reason he had. And then I'd go home, I'd go to school, and I was a town I was born in, but my parents were from somewhere else. So all these other kids, their families had been there for generations. So I was still an outsider. And these kids were like picking on me and beating on me and shit. And I was like, I got to take these ass whoopings home, but I ain't doing it here at school. So I became a fighter. And that's how I dealt with stuff. If you were messing with me and saying some things I don't like, I'm going to punch you in the throat hard as I can. And usually that ended that. You know, or people at least said, you know, it ain't worth messing with him. Leave him alone. And that was the way I handled things. And that's the way I thought I was supposed to handle things. Because I believed in that John Wayne, Clint Eastwood kind of way of thinking. And then somebody later on pointed out that those are all movie characters. That's not reality, but we'll get to that part. So I was going to those meetings, and I wasn't using. I learned how to bowl a little bit. You know, they always had donuts. Life was good. Got a job. I had an almost new car. I had a girl living in an apartment with me. Life is good. And then this friend of mine, he showed up at those meetings, and he had a special invitation from the judge to go, and he was getting his slip signed, and then he was smoking some weed on the way home, and he said that program was working real good for him. So he was on the marijuana maintenance program. And he invited me to join him, and I was like, well, you know, I just don't think it's a good idea, but you know, I got an addict brain, and it does stuff all by itself without me asking it to or wanting it to. And since I didn't have a sponsor, I wasn't talking to anybody. I wasn't telling anybody what was going on in here or here. I was really at the mercy of my addiction. And so by the time I saw my buddy again, I was like, yeah, let's try that. I mean, weed, that's for me, that's like the Diet Coke of drugs, right? I never got in any trouble smoking weed, shit. I mean, oh, that mellows me out, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, it also changes my mind about a whole lot of other stuff. So after a couple of weeks, I went from smoking weed to going right back to a whole lot of other stuff that I'd done before, the things that I really liked, things that really got me in a lot of trouble. And it was like, the thing that was crazy about that last time going out was, you know, I'd been caught up before, I'd gotten clean before, usually never voluntarily. You know, I got locked up in jail and I'd get clean, or I got shot and I went to the hospital for a while and I had to get clean. I got, you know, I joined the Army when I was in basic training, I kind of got clean. There was a lot of stuff that went on and I would get clean briefly. And when I started back up, you know, or switch drugs or whatever, there was always like a little honeymoon period where I'd get just a little taste of what I really wanted out of drugs. Even if it was just a day or an hour or 5 minutes, I would get that. But this last time I didn't get that. All I got was the obsession and the compulsion and just the drive to just get more. And it was sad and miserable and sick, and it was fucked up. And it was like, you know, 2 weeks in, the girl that was living there, her and most of the furniture moved out. And I found out that even just smoking weed, I can't hold a job. I found out some things about myself. It's like my disease had progressed to, I can't smoke weed and work a fucking job. Ain't that some shit? And of course, then I went back to shooting dope, and I found out like methamphetamine and heroin together. Don't recommend that combination unless you're really trying to get rid of all the excess things in your life. You know, jobs and girlfriends, you know, careers. Family members don't want to talk to you. I mean, you really can get it. You can clear the decks. So that's what I was doing. And pretty soon I'm homeless now. You know, if you let me come sleep on your couch, I mean, I'm an addict, which means I got a habit. I don't have a job. If you let me in your house, it's nothing personal. I'm going to steal some shit before I leave. So people were not letting me in their house. So now I'm living outdoors. And, you know, I found another guy who was in the same kind of shape I was in, and we became partners. We were like little Stoney MacGyvers, you know. We had, you know, scams are us. We would sell you fake drugs. We had a little starter pistol. We'd hold you up. We'd steal your car, steal the hubcaps or the, you know, the rims off of it or whatever. We did all that stuff. And then we ran into a guy with a real pistol, so we had to get a real pistol too. You know, so now here I am doing all that stuff. And I would not have been recognizable to somebody who knew me a year prior. I was down to 130 pounds. You could see like my whole skeleton if I took my shirt off. You're like, oh my God, you know. But he OD'd and he died. And now I'm all by myself. And it really was getting to a point where it's like I wasn't just dope sick, I was like sick. I had this cough that wouldn't go away and everything hurt, and it was winter time, and you know, I remember it's like in sometime in February, and we had like a little hideout, little hut that we lived in the woods. And but I got caught out in a storm, and I found like a old rotten tarp and I had it wrapped around me, and like it's raining and sleeting and snowing all at the same time, and the wind's blowing hard, and like ice water's running down the crack of my ass, and I'm thinking, man, I don't want to die like this. And I made a decision. I'm going to go back and find those people that were trying to help me before. And but every time I went to do it, that little voice in my head was like, you not in this kind of shape that you're in now, you can't do it now. You got to get something to take the edge off a little bit. But every time I did that, now I didn't want to go. Well, you go tomorrow. But tomorrow wasn't going to come. You know, and finally, God and the DEA and the Maryland State Police intervened. And the bikers that had been selling me drugs, a whole bunch of them, you know, they have these little parties up there every once in a while. I'm sure they probably do the same thing down here, where they kick everybody's door in at like 3 a.m. and lock everybody up all at once. Well, they did that. So they locked a whole bunch of these guys up. And the few that escaped the dragnet were not selling drugs to the crazy guy living in the woods. You know, I mean, I had hair then. It was like sticking out of my head like a wire brush. I hadn't changed my clothes in months. I couldn't remember the last time I had my shoes off. And I was crazy. And nobody, I mean, there was one guy I knew was holding, and I'm like beating on his door, like, please, man. And he stuck his head out of a second story window. He says, if you don't leave, I'm calling the police. The drug dealer's calling the police on you. It might be time to give the meetings another shot. And I realized, like, this is God working in my life. You know, this is the answer to that prayer of please help me. And so I turned myself in. That's how I felt about it. I went to this Serenity Club and I turned myself in. And it was still had never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. But there was people there who were drug addicts who were hiding out in AA, and they knew what I was going through, and they snatched me up. And they asked me, and they didn't ask me, you know, if I had any money or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. It's like, did you eat today? Nobody asked me that anymore. They asked me, do you have a place to stay? And I told them no. So they said, we got a place for you. So they took me down. This girl had a place. She would rent rooms out. And there was supposed to be somebody moving out in a couple of weeks. But she said, well, you can sleep on the couch till they move out. But before I could go in their house and take a shower, I had to strip naked in the backyard. And they sprayed me with a hose and scrubbed me with a big scrub brush and some dish soap so I could be clean enough to go in the house. And when I came out, all those clothes were gone. I don't know where they went. I don't miss them. And there were some almost new clean clothes that just about fit me in their place. And that was the beginning of my journey into recovery. And I got a sponsor. And I started trying to work the steps. And then AA was not the most conducive place for an addict like me to get clean, stay clean. Because there were a lot of people who didn't like addicts in AA. And they told me I didn't belong there. And, being kind of a fighter person, I would, just tell them to go fuck themselves or something. But that was not, that reaction for me wasn't conducive to my recovery either. Feeling like I'm got to fight for it that in that way. But a couple of weeks, couple of months, I really don't know when, somebody in my area started an NA meeting. And the first one was in the basement of somebody's house. And I asked my sponsor, all the younger people were real excited. And I talked to my sponsor, and he said, that's for dope fiends, and you're going. So my AA sponsor sent me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And that's where my journey of recovery really began. So the first one was kind of, it was a bunch of people who didn't know what they were doing, but we had a connection with some established NA meetings at that meeting. And from there, I went to some established NA meetings. Because in the two counties that are now the Susquehanna area where I live, there were zero meetings, except for that one in the basement. Nobody had literature. A lot of people really didn't know what they were doing, but there was a definite atmosphere. When I walked into that NA meeting, I knew I was at home because those were my kind of people. They were crazy, had long hair, tattoos and all that. It's like, yeah, this is the right one for me. And I was encouraged to share what was going on with me. Nobody had asked me what my opinion was or how I felt about anything in years and years. And I was telling them how it was really tough being a little dope fiend trying to stay clean in AA, and this great big biker guy came and hugged me, told me he loved me, which made me a little nervous. And he said, welcome home. Welcome home. And this has been my home ever since. Talking about, when I woke up this morning, I wasn't looking for nobody. Nobody was looking for me. I don't have any warrants. I got a fucking passport. I could go wherever I want. But I choose to come hang out with you guys. And that is, I'm free. I am truly free. And it's like, that's a blessing. This road that I started then has led me to, they said, beyond your wildest dreams. I'm like, my dreams can get pretty wild now. You got to understand, And I was 22. And being 22 and, having the mental capacity more like a, sixth grader, I thought for me that, my wildest dreams would be, I wanted to have two girlfriends and a hot rod car. Well, let me tell you something. You can get that in NA if you really want it. But, like a lot of my crazy dreams and things that I think I want, not all of those things are good for me. I found that out. Part of my disease is I want a lot of unhealthy shit. So after getting two women, really angry with me and getting about 50 tickets with the hot rod car, I changed up a little bit and I started doing, It's just, I never thought that my dreams were going to be that I was going to be a responsible person. That really makes me feel good to be responsible. I don't like a lot of the things I have to do as a responsible person. Sometimes it's a real pain in the ass. But following through and I never finished anything until I came to NA. Never. Never finished nothing. And you know, everything that I know as far as dealing with life, I learned here from you guys. There were some I had good men in my life from the very beginning. You know, I used to walk around looking at my feet all the time because I felt like such a piece of shit. And another, I don't know what's up with the bikers. There's always these big biker guys somehow attracted to me. And this guy comes, he grabs me by the chin, and he lifts my head up, and he says, "You hold your head up. You're one of us now." And that's like, man, I still get goosebumps thinking about it because I was like, wow, I'm part of this. I'm part of this. I never felt like I was part of any damn thing. You know, all stuff like that, I don't know if it ever meant anything to him, but it changed my life. And just little by little, you know, I started, you know, in step one, I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew that. I'm powerless over my addiction. A retarded kindergartner could tell you that. You just look at the, they used to always say, look at the record. It's like, man, I'm tired of looking at the record. I don't want to look at it. It's like, say, look at the record. You know, what did all your best thinking get you? You know, me getting my own way was almost fatal. Okay, so now what? I get it. So my life's unmanageable. Looks like I need a manager. Pretty basic stuff, right? Well, step two is that I'm coming to believe that there's some power that can help me do that. And in the beginning, I really didn't believe in God, and I'm not really sure that my beliefs now would be considered believing in God, but it's really not important what you guys think. I know what I believe, that I got a higher power, and that's really all you need to know. But the big hurdle for me was I could look around and see you guys had a higher power in your life. It was working for you. But if there was really a God or a higher power, why would they help somebody like me? You don't know what I've done in my life. You don't know where I've been. Why would they help someone like me? And then this old hillbilly guy says, God don't love you because you're good, dumbass. He loves you because he's good. And he says, if you can't believe in a higher power, can you see that I believe? I said, and I could look him in his eyes and see he really believed. And he says, until you get one of your own, you can use mine. And somehow that made sense. And I'd be like, you know, dear God of that crazy hillbilly fucker, you know, cut me some slack, amen. You know, I mean, it was that kind of, those were my prayers. And I had a big poster, my first apartment, had a big poster of the Just for Today up. And that was my prayer every day. Me and like 40 million cockroaches had a little one-bedroom apartment. And I went to meetings every day. And if I couldn't get to an NA meeting, I went to an AA meeting. And little by little, things got better. But I was still really having a lot of trouble kind of understanding, you know, a lot of these concepts and things were like, whoosh. It wasn't that I wasn't trying. I was just kind of brain damaged. You know, my liver was screwed up for a couple of years, and I was like, could barely talk until somebody took me to a doctor and he gave me a bunch of B12 shots, and like my whole brain like kicked back on. I mean, I'd really done some damage, and I was still angry. And that anger was just like all the time. And I ended up getting an assault charge with 2 years clean. I'm not going to say 2 years in 2 years of recovery because I can't really call everything I was doing then recovering. And let me tell you something. That ride to jail was a long one. I cried some real tears in the back seat of that police car. I'm not ashamed to tell you. And my sponsor at the time came and bailed me out. That's a good sponsor there. And I've bailed out a couple of my sponsees too, because I like to do for people what was done for me. But there is a vetting process we go through before I go just bail you out. So I don't want anybody to get too excited. and have this like rush to the stage or anything. But and he took me back to his house, and we sat at his kitchen table, and I was like, man, when are these character defects going to stop kicking me in my ass? And he says, 3 days after you're dead, they'll all be gone. I don't know where that came from, but that's what he said. So his are all gone. I still got a bunch of mine. But he said, in a very kind and gentle way, he said, I am making a commitment to teach you everything that I know about working this program in all areas of your life. He says, but you got to make a commitment that you're going to do everything you can do to learn what I'm going to teach you and to practice it in all areas of your life. And I made that promise. And have I fallen short many times? Hell yes. But I made that promise, and I meant it. And my second, you know, that was like my second bottom. And my recovery started then in a way that it hadn't really been, that it hadn't really existed in before. Because I really wanted this. I didn't just want to be clean. I wanted to live clean in a way that made me feel good. And I didn't feel good being clean and being mean and angry and pissed off all the time. And other people didn't like me. And I wanted to feel a part of all the time. And I wanted to be not just part of NA, I wanted to be part of the society, like it talks about in our literature. It's like we want to be members of society. I wanted to be a contributing member, and I knew I had something to contribute. You know, you guys convinced me that I was worth something. And I felt like I was throwing it all away without using drugs, and I didn't want that. So I started the steps over. So I knew my life was unmanageable. With or without drugs, my life's unmanageable. And I tell you something, I read that blue book cover to cover a bunch of times. I could read pretty good. And I have yet to see anything that says, now that you've worked all our steps and stayed clean for a number of years, your life is now manageable by you. No. No. My life is still unmanageable by me. And that's why I have a sponsor. I've got a committee. They used to talk about the committee. You don't hear so much about it anymore, but they say, you know, fire the committee in your head, hire us. Let us be your committee. So I got a committee, and it's not in here, and I'm not on it. I got other people who care enough about me to say, you know, your best friend is a guy who says, are you fucking crazy? What the hell are you doing? That's your bet. You better hold on to that one. The people are like patting you on the head, said, oh, everything will be all right. It's like, yeah, don't pay too much attention to what they say. So I got a real friends that aren't afraid to piss me off to tell me that what they see going on with me. And that's what I need in my life. I need that. So going back to step two, you know, I came to believe that it could work for me. You guys convinced me it could work for me too. You know, so now I'm convinced there's a higher power that loves me and wants to help me in my recovery and help me in my life. So what do? I made a decision. I made a whole lot of decisions. I made this decision that I was going to let this higher power care for my will and my life. Does that mean that I just said, you know, I turned it all over? No. I let God be the force in my life that pushes me forward. Doesn't mean, you know, I hear people talk about, well, I took my will back and then I passed it back like a yo-yo. I made lots of decisions in my life. I made a decision I was going to lose weight. Yeah, well, I'm not really acting on that one this weekend. Doesn't mean I changed my mind. No. Just means that I'm not always good at following through on every decision that I make all the time. So, you know, I asked God to look after my will and my life. And God's been doing his job all of this time. Have I always been doing my job? Not always. You know, it says to the best of my ability. Sometimes my ability ain't shit. You know, I have shitty days still. But I have a lot less of them. And the ones that I do have are gold-plated compared to the ones I had before. You know, I don't have to go to jail. I like that part. Jail is, I didn't leave anything in jail I feel like I need to go back to get. So I don't mind. I don't miss jail. But it, the steps have taught me, I mean, clearly I'm still crazy in a lot of ways. I still got a lot of screwed up thinking. I still got these character defects that sometimes and sometimes not seem to be removed. You know, God doesn't say when God's going to remove them, just says that I'm willing to let them go. I'm really willing to let a lot of them go. Some of them I'm not that willing. You know, I'm working on that. That might be a lifetime project for some of this stuff. But it allows me to live like a sane person, even when I'm not sane, which is a lot of the time. You know, the parents that, my parents had a no contact order. If I came within 500 feet of their house, I could get locked up. When my dad passed away, he was living in my house. And we had really made a peace about a lot of the stuff that took place when I was a kid. You know, and for me, it became more about what kind of son do I want to be? And I stopped putting expectations on them about what kind of parents they should be. And that's a blessing that came through Narcotics Anonymous for me to just be able to reach out to them in some way. And my mom is still crazy, but now she's got treatment. No, it's not, you know, I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. But it's like, but she's still a very difficult person. But I love my mom. She didn't choose to be in, you know, have insanity. And it's like, you know, she needs my help. And that I'm proud to act, to be her son and to help her. And that's a gift of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, every good thing in my life comes from Narcotics Anonymous, comes from you guys. You know, my relationship with my higher power only works when I'm hanging out with you guys. If I let myself drift away, which really hasn't happened too many times, but when I kind of drift away a little bit, my relationship with God starts to get thin. So I need you guys. It's like what they used to say, it's a three-legged stool or four-legged stool or whatever. I need all the legs of my stool. You know, I'm a big fat guy. I'm not getting by on two legs of the stool. I got to have them all. So I need you guys. I need the steps. I need my God. I need my sponsor. I need everybody. You know, we talk about never alone. They said, you don't have to do anything alone ever again. You don't have to. It's like, I'll go you one better. It's not a good idea for me to do anything by myself ever. And you know what's great? I don't have to. I don't ever have to. You know, I'm working with some damaged equipment up here. So I need other people to kind of pitch in their 2 cents and help me stay on the straight and narrow. I can't. In all areas of my life, I mean, it's like if the people who sponsored me and mentored me in this program had just stuck to teaching me the steps and that was it, I would have died a long time ago. I mean, I had people, you know, I after a really horrible divorce, I had my only transportation was a Jeep. And I'm driving this Jeep, so to kind of let off some steam, I decided to go out in the quarries on some trails and ended up breaking the Jeep. I broke the axle. And didn't have any money to fix it. So now I don't have any transportation. And I'm driving like 30 miles to work. And I went to a meeting and I said, man, I got to be the stupidest motherfucker in here today. You know, it's like, I'm the asshole. Everybody look. And I told him what was going on. And this guy comes up to me, says, hey, my son just joined the Navy. I said, well, congratulations. You know, I hope he does well. He says, no, that's not what I'm telling you. I bought him a car to drive. He says, not a fancy car, a new car, but it runs good. And he's going to be gone in the Navy for like 4 years. So I got this extra car. I said, well, can I rent it? And he says, motherfucker, just take the keys, drive the car. I'm like, I should pay you back. He says, drive the goddamn car, would you? Just drive it. And I was like, yes, sir. So I drove that car for 6 months until I got the money together to fix that Jeep. And it's like, that's what people in NA do. So when I was in a position to have a spare car, I had a car that a whole bunch of crazy dope fiends drove that motherfucker. And you know what's crazy? All these brand new guys were driving this car, and they always brought it back. It was like a little smart car. They'd shine it all up and fill it full of gas and try to do all this stuff to it. And I was like, it's a piece of shit. Just drive it till the wheels fall off. Don't get too excited, right? But then I lent it to a guy with 30 years clean, and he roached it, which kind of ticked me off. But, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, to be able to do that, and it's like, that really means something to somebody. It's like, I mean, recovery is all areas of our life. It's like, I remember listening to this guy talking and sharing at a meeting, and he was saying, yeah, you know, one of my sponsees asked to borrow a pair of pants because he was going to a job interview. But he didn't give it to him. He said, it's not my job to get you dressed for an interview. I was like, you're a piece of shit, dude. You should have took him out to Walmart and bought him a, you know, $50 suit. Because that's what I would have done. Because that's what people did for me. I mean, we're here to help each other. And it's not just reading out of the book or quoting some shit. That's not what, my first year, I didn't need any of that. I needed a job. And people helped me get a job. You know, this, my program encompasses all areas of my life. So why shouldn't my recovery and my willingness to help somebody else encompass all areas of their life? If there's something I can do for you that will help you, goddamn it, I'm going to do it. You know why? Because I feel great when I do that. You can't buy that feeling. To be a positive part of somebody else's life, to be just a little piece of somebody else's success, that's the hit. That's the hit, baby. You can't get a rush like that from anything else. A sponsee who's lying, 10 years ago he was lying about his clean time and all kinds of shit. Now he's like the CEO of some company that's developing cancer treatments and all kinds of stuff, which I think is a miracle because I didn't think he was that smart. But he surprised me. But both his parents came up to me with tears in their eyes and hugged me, and I haven't met a lot of parents. You know, usually guys, you don't meet their family. I sponsor them. Crying, thanking me for helping their son. And it's like, I told them, I'm just doing what my God wants me to do, but I got to do it. I got to be part of it. I got to be part of the we, you know. And in the beginning, when those old guys would tell me, yeah, we get a lot more out of this than you do, I'd be like, yeah, that's just a lot of shit you say, so I don't feel like such a loser. But that's really the truth, because I get a lot out of doing that. And that's the awesome thing about this. It's like, it keeps me clean. It keeps me wanting to come back. It keeps all those good feelings that I always wanted to have, and that feeling of belonging that I always wanted to have, never could get anywhere else. And I don't feel like hitting people much. Sometimes. You know, I've worked all 12 steps on my anger issues. I went through and worked, because I had a really nasty divorce. So I worked all 12 steps just on relationship issues. So now I'm been married to a different woman for 21 years. And it's not all, I mean, everything's not great. We got some issues, we got some things we got to work on. But it's like, she finally, because she's a Naranon ACA, she's really sick, because she likes addicts. Yeah. She seemed real smart when I met her, but, you know, started to wonder. But she finally broke down and really is working her steps in her program after all these years. And I think that's going to help our relationship, too. You know, I hope it does. But, you know, no matter what happens there, I got you guys. You know, I lost everything I had before. I'm not afraid of that. I lost relationships before. I mean, I'd hate for it to happen, but I'm not afraid of that. But the one thing I'm afraid to lose is, you guys gave me a desire to be clean. I got clean. You gave me a desire to stay clean. And you helped me learn how to live a new way of life. And I don't want to lose that desire, because I've seen what happens when people lose the desire to be clean. If I go out and use, I might lose it and never get it back, ever. Ever. I don't know if I got another chance. The only way to find out how many chances you got is use them all up. I got way too much. I got way more now than I ever had. When I came in, the only thing I had to lose was my life. Now I got a lot more than that. I got a lot of stuff. And it's not stuff so much as the way I feel about myself, friendships. You know, I got a legacy. To me, it's like, you know, nobody's going to name a bridge after me. You're not going to go through Havre Grace, Maryland and see, you know, Bud Pilcher High School or any of that shit. That's not going to happen. But I've been able to help some guys, and now I'm watching them helping some guys. And people that aren't even born yet will get that little ripple that I helped give a little push to. And that's what excites me about my legacy. And I'm excited to be here. I appreciate everybody that helped put this together. I love Branna. I've been coming here pretty regular for a while. I've gotten to meet a lot of people. A lot of you are getting to be close friends. And I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. And I'm going to keep coming back and try to do this one more day. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, thank you so much for sharing.